Everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenues Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Sipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Lavin, and Thomas Henderson. How you guys doing?
Good.
Pretty good.
I'm doing well.
So I heard there was some mystery about my whereabouts last week.
Mm-hmm.
It was nothing particularly interesting, so. All right. We will start off with promote, extend, trade. And today is August 21st. And that means that there are 132 days left in the year. Now watch this. There's 132 days left in the year. 1, 3, 2. In baseball, a lot of number ones wore number 32. See what I did there?
Oh, my God.
Nice. Mm. All right, so who are we going to promote, extend, trade of all these ace pitchers, these number ones that wore number 32? Sandy Koufax, Steve Carlton, Roy Halladay.
Koufax, Carlton, Halladay, I think.
Mm-hmm.
In that order.
Yeah, but Carlton was a Philly, so.
Yeah, so was Halladay.
So was Halladay. But I think of him as a Blue Jay, but yeah.
Yeah. I
have to trade Halladay just because he threw that perfect no-hitter, perfect game, whatever it was, in the playoffs for the Phillies.
It was a perfect game against the Reds.
I mean, that sucks. I mean, good for him, but at the same time, it was for the Phillies, and it benefited them, so that sucks.
Not that I want to make this dark, but I feel like Halladay does not get enough. It feels like he got more of a pass than he should have for the manner in which he crashed that plane. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just go Google it. So I am not. I used to love him, and I have some harsher opinions of him now.
He was intoxicated, or it was more than just alcohol? It was harder.
More and doing dangerous shit on top of it. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
I would have traded Steve Carlton because he is, like, more known for being a Philly than Roy Halladay is, but his name is Steve.
That's right.
So, I used him in my sister's wedding speech, so, because all Steves are, you know, awesome. And Roy Halladay was kind of like a throwback, you know, pitcher in the era in which he pitched. Not a lot of guys threw as many innings as he did, threw as many complete games as he did, and all that kind of stuff. So a guy like him was refreshing, but then, you know, he did go to the Phillies. So
Koufax, of course.
Yeah, Koufax is, he was just like one of the legends of the game type thing, where Carlton is underrated probably in that sense.
I agree.
And Halladay is, he gets lost a little bit in how good pitchers are now, but Koufax was like a special breed.
Hey, Koufax, the way Koufax did it too was so unique is maybe too strong a word, but so he very much had his
ahead
own
of his time.
Yeah, maybe that's
time,
the
I
best
say.
Way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
He was Jacob deGrom, but 300 innings.
Until his arm literally fell off. But that also came with a price for him with arthritis, I think it was, that ended his career. But
yeah,
at the end of the day, he did stuff at a time where he was just unique. He was a unicorn at that time, and that was really cool. Where Halladay was a unicorn in a different way, doing it more finesse style. But and Carlton was really good.
His final season. In 1966, 323 innings thrown, 8.83 strikeouts per nine, 2.1 walks per nine, a 1.73 ERA, a 2.07 FIP, and 9 F4.
Not bad.
And then he peaced out.
Yeah, because his arm was done, right?
Yeah, he's like, I'm out.
Pitch anymore.
And they just lost the World Series to the Orioles, and it was just goodbye.
I mean, his 60s went 6.3 F4, 5.7, 9.2, 6.1, 10, 9.1. Good lord.
Not bad. Not bad at all. Speaking of bad, let's talk about the Mets affiliates this week.
Oh, boy. Yeah, definitely less, bad.
Yeah, the last... unfortunately.
I know
the last 2 weeks, they have been just trash. Syracuse Mets, first up, they played the Charlotte Knights this week, and they went 2-3 against them, and they're currently playing right now as we record. Best case scenario, Syracuse splits the series against literally the worst team in the International League. The only team that's actually worse than them. Worst case scenario, they lose to literally the worst team in the International League. They are 50-66 right now, depending on if they win or lose, you know, add one to either win or loss column. But they're still a distant second to last, 15 games behind the Durham Bulls. So Syracuse not going anywhere. The Ronies played the Richmond Flying Squirrels, and they went 3-3 against them, and that leaves them at 15-29 on the season. That is dead last in the International League Northeast, and 11 games behind the Portland Sea Dogs.
I have to ask, what is a Roni? Is it short for pepperoni, rice-a-roni? Is it its own entity entirely? What the hell?
That's a good question. The Mets had in their system last year, I believe he played for Binghamton, Bradley Roni. So I feel like he would probably be the best guy to ask.
Okay. Let's get him on the pod, ask him exactly what a Roni is.
Let's look into this.
This merits further investigation.
The Brooklyn Cyclones, they played the Hudson Valley Renegades this week, and this was an important series because the Renegades are in first place and Brooklyn was in second. And Brooklyn failed miserably. They went 2-4 against Hudson Valley. Where is Hudson? I think they're in Fishkill, which is somewhere upstate. But they went 2-4 against them, and that leaves Brooklyn at 26-23 on the year, 2.5 games behind Hudson Valley for first place. At least they're over 500 still in the second half after what a terrible first half that they had. So that's something.
Yeah, we're trending to the side of the minor leagues that got better as the year went on, because obviously we'll talk about it later, but Syracuse lost Beatty and Binghamton lost Alvarez, and you know what I mean? So Brooklyn
that
was gaining.
That Binghamton roster is a little depressing right now.
Because there's just no one in the middle of the system so dead. Like, all the good prospects are in the Gulf Coast and shit now. Like, all the guys who you're really excited about, we'll be talking about them in Brooklyn next year and maybe in Binghamton next year if things go well.
Yep. Well, speaking of that bottom of the system, St. Lucie, they played the Lakeland Flying Tigers, and unfortunately, they lost this series 5-1. St. Lucie and Palm Beach Cardinals, they've basically been jockeying for first place, flip-flopping for a good 2-3 weeks now. And as things stand right now, the two teams are both 26-22, so they're tied for first place. And it feels like this happens a lot this year, but St. Lucie is going to be playing Palm Beach Cardinals this upcoming week. So depending on how that goes, hopefully St. Lucie has a pretty solid lead over Palm Beach when we're talking about them next week.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, the FCL Mets. Thank God for the FCL Mets. They are 33-20 on the season, and they went a perfect 5-0 this week. So something
good.
Yeah, something good happened at least.
Thomas, do you have any Jet Williams takes?
I mean, he's doing his Jet Williams thing. I'm excited to see him in Brooklyn next year. I'm assuming he ends up at some point. But he's going to be funny because he's just going to, like, walk and steal bases, and he'll steal, like, 2-3 bases a game when he gets on and stuff. And he's playing shortstop.
No one's going to have any ability to throw him out. It's going to be hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Love those new rules. All right, so let's get to the meat and potatoes here this week. Let's start off with some breaking news. Well, not really breaking news at this point, but some pretty recent news. It's sad news, actually. The San Francisco Giants have claimed Mets catching legend Patrick Mazeiko off of waivers, bringing his time with the team to a close. And it
I'm
is
sorry,
the
I thought you said there was sad news.
Oh,
he's absolutely going to end up back in the Mets system
in like 2 weeks.
Yeah,
it's good, and we're going to be the
poaching there at some point.
Yes, like they clearly value something with him in terms of his abilities in around a baseball team. I don't know what it is because we don't see it because his on the field stuff is up and down, mostly down. But I think he ends up back here when the Giants DFA him again because I'm sure that'll happen.
So, and we're literally going to be that scene from The Office with Michael screaming about Toby, is it? I've never actually watched The Office. I just know the GIF sets. No, God, please, no.
I think it is Toby, yeah.
No!
It's 100% Toby.
I think that's when Toby comes back or whatever. Because he's gone
from Costa Rica.
I'm not going to go so far as to say if I was in a room with Bin Laden, whoever the other person was, and Patrick Mazeiko, I'd shoot Patrick Mazeiko twice. But
friend of the podcast, Patrick Mazeiko.
Yes, yes. I'm sure he's a lovely individual, and I bear him no ill will, but I do not have any desire to see him on any Met roster as a player ever again.
Yeah, and Perez kind of does the same thing with just being a better catcher.
It's their replacement-level catchers.
Yep.
Yeah.
By and the very nature.
Now that they found a third one they're clearly comfortable with, because I think the more I thought about the Mazeika stuff, the more I think it was not so much about him, but more not being comfortable with whoever else was down there. But they very clearly are comfortable with Perez because he's playing a lot. And he hasn't been bad. He's been fine. He's been a replacement level backup catcher. He had a big hit a few games ago. Yeah, I think he had a hit today too.
Yeah, yeah. So
it's hard to argue if he's your third catcher. It's fine. He's an upgrade over Mazeika.
With Mazeika being gone, and here's another throwback name, Kevin Kaczmarski, having retired a couple of years ago. Like, the best players in Kingsport history are gone now, it's sad.
That's a good observation. I hadn't made that connection, actually.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were both, like, accomplished college hitters in in Kingsport, like, just destroying everybody else. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good times. I think Kaczmarski hit like 400 and Mazeika hit like 350. It was fun.
Yeah, Mazeika was good then. Like,
yeah.
He was a good minor league player.
And then he got to age appropriate level and and that's what happens. All right, so, you know, he's gone, but baseball is a game of rebirth and, you know, one door closes with Mazeika being gone and new ones are opening. And the last week has been pretty eventful in terms of player debuts.
Debuts.
So we are going to start from the bottom and work our way up, starting with a bunch of 2022 draftees. Connor Brandon made his professional debut with the FCL Mets. He pitched a scoreless inning. He gave up a hit, but then that runner got erased when he was caught stealing. Dylan Tebrake made his professional debut also at the FCL Mets. And he pitched a scoreless inning. He gave up a hit and he struck out a batter. DeAndre Smith, he made his professional debut, FCL again, of course. And he is 0-for-7 in two games so far with one walk. Great. And two strikeouts. And last and certainly not least is Kevin Parada. And he made his professional debut with FCL Mets. And in two games, he is 2-for-6 with a double, two walks, two strikeouts, and he was hit by a pitch. Mets already moved Blade Tidwell, Tyler Stewart, Paul Gervais, and Chase Estep up from the FCL Mets to St. Lucie after, like, you know, one or two pitching appearances or a handful of games. So hopefully Parada, you know, gets promoted.
I could see that, yeah. Next
week. Yeah. I think they already said, kind of indicated he's headed there soon. Is it Estep or is it Estep? I don't actually know.
I believe it's Estep, but
yeah. Oh, okay. I thought it was Estep. So, I mean, we'll figure it out eventually.
But yeah, I have to go back to, like, the videos and see.
But he was too good for that level. at stuff. And it's going to be the same thing with Parada. They're just, they played at a legit big conference, you know?
Mm-hmm. Parada was arguably the best. Parada was the best pure hitter period in college baseball this year, arguably. Mm-hmm. So, like, the FCL is going to be a joke for him.
And that's fine. I'm especially with how late the draft is now.
Yep.
I'm fine with kind of making the first year or whatever get used to professional baseball before we really go into high gear.
Here's what a professional clubhouse is like.
It's true. That stuff matters. It doesn't matter. I don't want to say it doesn't matter to us. Because,
don't go to the major league clubhouse. I mean, though.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these guys, it's probably their first real job. You know.
Yeah, it's different.
It's probably good that they get some experience being in a professional setting, even if it's, you know,
even a
professional baseball setting.
Because no matter how good, you could go to Vanderbilt, like, it's not the same as being in a professional setting, no matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Zero problem with them getting an adjustment at the FCL. Mm-hmm. Here's what it's like. Great. Go vacation for 3 months and come back ready to go. We'll see you in 2023.
Yep.
Oh, Lindor just missed that. God.
And he hit two foul ball home runs too.
Fuck. Sorry, continue.
Yeah, so hopefully I hope that Parada gets sent to St. Lucie just so we can get some of the batting data from him.
Mm.
I could see him going to St. Lucie and then starting in Brooklyn next year. Or starting in St. Lucie and then sending him to Brooklyn really quick just to kind of get him to speed, like, up to the same level where he should be at.
Yeah, the Alvarez track where he was in Brooklyn, he was in St. Lucie mm-hmm. for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's not like there's anyone that is on the same. What's the right word? Track, I guess, you know, catching wise, that would be getting in Parada's way. Like, the most interesting catching guy that is down there at that level is Fernando Villalobos. He's not a bust. I'm not going to say he's a bust because he literally just turned 20, but, you know, he's like a secondary guy. He's not an actual prospect. He's just kind of like a guy like, maybe one day
he might be a backup catcher prospect type thing.
Yeah, so. No one's going to be taking away innings behind the plate from Parada. No one's going to be getting in the way of him DHing and getting enough at bats. So,
yeah,
he should have plenty of time
this year. And I wonder if, because he's an athletic kid, I wonder if they flirt with putting him at different positions too, like in the outfield or something like that. That's valuable to have, especially if. We'll see next year if Alvarez comes up and looks like he's going to be a good major league player. You could kind of get creative with that, too. And you could do that in Brooklyn. And it won't really hurt his development because he's still hitting and he'd still be doing the majority of the catching. Because he's not an Alvarez type where it's catcher or DH. Alvarez can't even really be a first baseman. Parada's more athletic than him.
The Bryce Harper path. I like it.
I was going Wilson Contreras, Will Smith path, but I like it.
Okay. Well, you know, shoot for the stars. Bryce Harper. Moving all the way up the ladder now, Brett Beatty. He made his long-awaited, I guess, MLB debut last Wednesday. In storybook fashion, he hit a home run in his first at-bat. Family and friends were in the stands, and everyone rejoiced, and it was very nice. And in his first couple of games so far, he's kind of been a little eh. You know, I didn't think he was going to light the world on fire, but I thought he'd maybe draw a couple more walks than he has so far. But eh, you know, he's also
faced some really good pitchers.
Yeah,
so far.
Like he had a nice moment that started his career and it could never be taken away from him. And the family had a nice moment. And it's a handful of games so far, so you know, it is whatever. But we're happy.
Yeah, he looks like a rookie.
I'm a little... And this was something I noticed when they called him up as well. Like, his initial exposure to AAA, he was slipping back into those ground ball heavy ways. And he's been pretty ground ball heavy in the majors so far. And he's hitting the ball really hard, right? He's making good contact, but... And he's also, like, demonstrated an ability to fix this problem before, but I think that is something to keep an eye on, especially if he's here for a longer sample and we get a more meaningful representative look.
I think it, at the very least, is going to be here for a month, because when Escobar comes back, they're not going to keep Yolmer Sanchez around for,
I would assume not.
They'll platoon him and Beatty, which I think is correct, but he has until Guillorme comes back, which is September. So we're going to have a – and I think it'll serve him well to be eased into Major League Baseball. I don't think necessarily you need to go – every prospect doesn't need to be your full-bore guy right away. You could ease guys in because it's a totally different ballgame. But he looks like a rookie sometimes. Like, that's really what it is. He hasn't come up and been Vaughn Grissom where he's hitting 380 or whatever. And that's fine. That's going to happen to most guys. It's I feel like that's the exception, not the rule for that stuff.
So we're saying that he's derping right now, basically.
I just closed his Fangraphs tab, but I wanted to check what the heck is his... His Z contact is 100% right now. His contact rate is 84%, right? Like, so the... That's maybe the biggest positive sign right now. He's not getting fooled, really. He's not, like, seeing Major League breaking stuff and be like, holy shit, I can't handle this. He's hitting the ball on the ground too much. He's fixed it once before. I think there's something, like, overall, it's still mostly encouraging.
Mm-hmm. And he's done that against, like, Wheeler and Nola and... Mm-hmm. Max Fried, like AJ Minter and Jose Alvarado diced them up. Well, find the two guys who do that in AAA, you know.
Yep.
It's from the left side. It's
he
just has to. The only way he's going to learn that is being in the majors. But
those guys are going to dice up most major league lefties.
Exactly. Exactly. That is nothing. I'm nothing against him. It's going to happen, and it's going to look like a 22-year-old or whatever he is against a major league vet who's really good. But also he. Looked fine against Wheeler and Nola and Max Fried, who's a lefty, and that was more encouraging than how the ground balls, which are a thing, are discouraging for me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, he hasn't, like we've said, he hasn't looked overmatched or just completely like he doesn't belong at any point. And that bodes well.
Give you one more. So his average exit velocity is right now is 89.5. Puts him right around guys like Wilson Contreras, Alec Bohm, Max Muncy, Josh Naylor, Pete Alonso. So fix the launch angle and something.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he started the year off hitting way too many ground balls, like you guys discussed last week, and he kind of turned that around in June when he came back from a disabled list stint, and now he's, you know, he went off in June and July, so and part of August.
It's also like 5 games. Like, at the end of the day, the sample is very tiny for him right now, so not saying that it's not a problem because it was a previous thing, that's why it's on our radar, but I think if it wasn't a previous thing, then it would just be, oh, he's hitting the ball on the grounds in this little stretch here, you know.
Thomas, don't you understand we need to talk about something for content?
Oh, no, we do. I mean, we could just talk about how good Nate Fisher is. That's fine.
Oh, we'll get there. Don't worry. We'll get there.
I'm Alex Heath, and I'm co-hosting Land of the Giants. This season, Meta, the company formerly known as Facebook. So far, we've told the story of Mark Zuckerberg's journey to reaching billions of users, from the creation of the news feed to the acquisition of Instagram. But such massive scale, that comes at a price. In our upcoming episodes, we'll examine how the company has had to grapple with the uncomfortable side of its power. From how to reckon with former President Donald Trump.
I think Mark, in the end, felt that if you're going to start saying that heads of government can't threaten to deploy force to restore order, that sets a really quite a worrisome precedent.
To the harms its own technology amplifies.
Borderline harmful, sensational content fundamentally does better, you know, under user engagement.
Will Zuckerberg's high stakes pivot to building the metaverse work? And if it does, what does that mean for all of us? Follow Land of the Giants wherever you listen to hear new episodes every Wednesday.
Hi, I'm Neelai Patel. I'm the editor-in-chief of The Verge, and I'm also the host of Decoder. It's a business and technology podcast where I interview a diverse cast of C-suite executives, creators, and policymakers. I ask them how they make decisions, what their org charts look like, what keeps them up at night, and what the future for their industries hold. We just had Hank Green on the show. He's one of the biggest YouTubers around. Here's what he said when I asked him if he could quit YouTube.
No. Both culturally and economically, I could not walk away from YouTube. It's a little bit like saying, would you walk away from America? For me, you know, it's like there's things I very much don't like about it, but I feel a little like a citizen, and that would be such a big decision to make for me culturally. But in terms of money, no, also no. Monetization, like just AdSense, is really quite powerful.
This conversation with Hank Green was endlessly fascinating. He has so many ideas on how creators can and should make money. So if you like that clip, go and subscribe to Decoder in your podcast player of choice. That's Decoder, hosted by me, Neelai Patel. Here we go.
All right, so Brett Beatty is not the only major league debut that has occurred in the last couple of days. Jose Budo, he also made his debut. He pitched on Sunday because of the doubleheader this, Saturday, and then injuries to Carlos Carrasco and Taijuan Walker. And I wasn't expecting much, and it really went as I expected. You know, I've never been much of a Budo fan, I have to admit. I saw him a lot, and I thought he was very eh. And basically, this was a recipe for disaster. A pitcher who's very a two-pitch pitcher, average fastball, above-average changeup, has extreme fly ball tendencies, pitching in Citizens Bank Ballpark. You know, what do you think is going to happen here?
Yeah,
that first inning was
why he was sent back out in the fourth.
Yeah, because they honestly they got a nice little. If you would have told me four runs in three innings, I would have been like, okay,
yeah.
Like, it's not great, but you definitely kept the Mets in the game, which is what he did, and then they pushed him a little too far, and there you go.
Mm-hmm. Like that first inning was terrible. I'm happy he settled down in those next couple of innings, because at least he would have been able to hang his head high, and say, okay, I got roughed up the beginning, but I powered through everything. But then, he was, like you said, he was left in just one inning too many. He gave up that second home run to Alec Boehm, and that was all she wrote.
Yeah, it's always a tough spot. It's a spot start for him. He pitched, like, I think he threw an inning on Thursday.
Yeah, it was like a one inning kind of bullpen session.
He opened the game, yeah. And so, at the end of the day, he hasn't really pitched in a week or so, too, which isn't ideal for a guy. It's a tough spot. It really is. And obviously I'm not the biggest Budo fan either, but it's nice to see him get his debut anyway.
Yeah, like good for him. He got the call. That is the ultimate goal. Exactly. He'll have a baseball card and he'll get that prorated salary for whatever one game.
He gives me extreme like Rays minor leaguer vibes too, where they teach him some slider and he ends up a solid pitcher because he needs another breaking pitch.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a viable starter at this point in his career, and with the way that he's been going, I don't know if he will ever be one here. I don't know, but I mean, he's basically a two pitch guy, and he suffers extremely once he gets past an inning in the minor leagues. Anyway, once he gets past a lineup for one time, like I wrote an article that went up about him, and I looked at the numbers. In the fourth inning, he has like a 4.9 ERA. In the fifth inning, he has like a 9 ERA. In the sixth inning, he has like a 5 ERA, and he's never actually like pitched beyond that, except in one to two times in relief.
Yeah, I think if you teach him a breaking pitch and make him a two-inning reliever guy, I could kind of see something there. But I don't think the Mets have the facilities to do that at this current state in their player development cycle, because they just haven't done that with other guys yet. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. Another guy who's made his debut, Nate Fisher. He came in for relief of Jose Budo. He also made his major league debut. He's been solid with Binghamton and Syracuse this year. He has a combined 3.38 ERA in 72 innings, 62 hits allowed, 31 walks, and 71 strikeouts. Like Budo, you know, he's really here more out of necessity in a in an emergency situation. But, you know, same thing, good for him. He's going to get that prorated salary, and he's going to get that baseball card and everything. So we're happy for
him. He looked good, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, he looked like a guy who you don't DFA, you option, and you keep bringing him up and sending him back down. Just a shuttle arm for the rest of the season. Because he didn't really get hit hard. He has a few pitches that he could throw for strikes, and he tunnels them, and he looked fine. I was more impressed with Fisher than I expected to be.
Yeah, same. I mean, he was, you know, signed by the Mets as a free agent over the winter. I mean, it's crazy when you think about his whole story from beginning to end. He was signed by the Mariners as an undrafted free agent. He got released during COVID. And then the Mariners, you know, when the 2021 season started, they signed him back. And, you know, then we signed him, and here he is now pitching the major league. So.
And he was, like, out of baseball.
Like, he was done. He thought he was basically...
Yeah.
He's, like, a financial advisor somewhere making
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen several people tweet some version of he was money because...
Nice.
Very funny. Very comedic.
Yep. And then one more, not exactly a debut, but kind of, because it's the first time that this guy suited up for the Mets. Tomas Nito, he got put on the injured list because of COVID again. This poor guy, this is like the third time he's gotten COVID. It's not going to be a long thing, obviously, with him, but he's unavailable. And James McCann, sadly, is not very good again. And the Mets needed a catcher. And Francisco Alvarez has really not been particularly great lately. In his last 2 weeks, he's hitting .114 with a .347 OPS, which is very not good. And he's only hitting .165 with a .678 OPS in this whole month that he's been with Syracuse. So he hasn't really performed to the point where the Mets are getting their hand forced. So they called up Michael Perez instead. The Mets acquired Perez from the Pittsburgh Pirates a couple of weeks ago, in exchange for cash at the trade deadline, or I think it was actually a little bit before. Either way, though.
Yeah, it was around the time when they were going through it catcher injury-wise, when they needed to call up a bunch of dudes from Syracuse. They acquired him to have him catch for Syracuse, and he just stayed around.
But it's only been a couple of games. You know, he hasn't lit the world on fire. He doesn't have to, but he's, you know, the couple of hits that he's had, he's made them count. He's driven in a couple of runs. So, you know, good for him. And again, same thing, you know, get that prorated salary while you can. Because as soon as Nito's back, you know, Perez is going to go back down to Syracuse. But a friend of mine showed me something, and this is actually really funny. Can you guys go to Baseball Savant, go to his page for a second?
Michael Perez?
Yeah.
I did this recently because I own him on my NPL team. It's
nice. His similar batters.
Pretty. I went to the wrong Michael Perez.
Yeah, I'm sure there are quite a few.
There's one in the Tampa Bay system, a pitcher. Similar batters to Michael Perez. Scrolling. Oh, God. Really? What the hell is this third one?
I know, right? So, similar batters to Michael Perez. 2022, James McCann.
Oh, no.
Not great. No. 2022, Roughneck Odor.
Here's the punchline, though.
Okay.
2020, Aaron Judge.
Oh, so what you're saying is the Mets got the 2020... for MVP.
I think so. And
for
then
cash.
Was that the year his shoulder was hurt? Maybe not. Oh, no. Yes, it was, because he only had 100 to play. He still had a 140 weighted. How is Michael Perez in any way similar?
I think
that's really funny.
It's because he has like 10 hits and like four of them are home runs or something like that. So his, you know, ISO is extremely like high. And then to wrap that up, Jesus Aguilar and J.D. Martinez, who are no slouches either. So, yeah, the Mets made a very shrewd move in acquiring Michael Perez.
His ISO is only 154, so. Mm. I mean, he has six home runs in, like, 44 games.
Well,
six of his 17 hits are home runs.
There you go. That's Aaron Judgian.
And he had 3 in one game, which is hilarious. Like, watching him play, I was, how did that happen? I know, like, stuff happens, but, like, Kirk Nieuwenhuis doing it is like, how does that happen?
Right.
Captain Kirk.
Wow. Kirk references, Kevin Kaczmarski references. This is,
I love Nieuwenhuis.
Me
like,
too.
I thought he was. I know he was just a whatever fourth outfielder, but I didn't care. He was one of my guys.
Same.
What's easier to spell, Kaczmarski or Nieuwenhuis?
Nieuwenhuis.
Nieuwenhuis. I also have N-E-I-U in my phone autocorrects to Nieuwenhuis.
Yep.
So, so I didn't have to memorize it.
Smart man. So yeah, the last couple of weeks, a ton of minor leaguers, you know, making their professional debuts, and now, you know, a lot of draftees making their professional debuts, and then now minor leaguers making their major league debuts. So maybe a couple of weeks we'll get a Francisco Alvarez. Maybe in a couple of weeks we'll get a Mark Vientos. Who knows? Maybe we'll get Travis Blankenhorn made his debut already, but maybe he'll get some actual playing time.
Top prospect, Travis Jankow.
Don't give me hope.
Yeah.
There are guys in the system, though, who maybe can be contributors. And, you know, with the way the Mets have been playing and the way that the Braves have been playing lately, they might need all the help they can get, because this is looking like it's going to be a slog here. All right. If anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You could follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at Evlahost343. Ken is at Ken1191. And Thomas is at SaidMetSeasonSZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Rate and review. And of course, we thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.